In the Civil Rights Act of 1968, America does move forward. And the bell of freedom rings out a little louder.
Hi there. This is A Little Louder, a podcast for wonks, housers, and rabble-rousers, where we talk about fair housing, community development, and how we can use these issues to build people power and work toward equity and justice. I'm Michael DePland. In July, Texas Housers was made aware of a property in Houston that was potentially experiencing mass evictions, more than 100 at one time, and alongside other trusted partners, such as Lone Star Legal Aid and Texas Legal Services Center, we dug deeper into what we'd come to understand to be an issue at a small number of properties where vouchers were expiring, but residents were not made aware. Notices to vacate were going out without what seems to be a solid reason to evict, substandard living conditions in general, which we'll get to a little later, and really more questions than answers. So at this time, I'd love to bring in our guests to the show. First, I'd like to introduce everyone to Taylor Laredo. He is a new member at Texas Housers, and he's been involved with what's happening in Houston at Cabo San Lucas Apartments. So, Taylor, I'd love for you to introduce yourself.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me on. My name is Taylor Laredo, and I started back in May as the new community navigator in the Houston office of Texas Housers. The majority of my work has concentrated on monitoring evictions throughout Harris County, also enhancing tenant education and understanding of their rights before, during, and after their eviction hearings.
Thanks, Taylor. And second, I would love to bring in Donna Carney from Lone Star Legal Aid. Donna, could you please tell us a little bit about your work?
Sure. Hi, and thanks for having me on. I'm Donna Carney. I'm a litigation director with Lone Star Legal Aid. I office in Houston, but we cover dozens of counties on the eastern side of the state, both in the big city and the rural areas. And we've really been focused quite a bit on eviction defense and not just defending tenants facing eviction, but also going after landlords who violated tenant rights. So thank you for having us, and thank you for all that you do. The Housers folks have just been absolutely amazing and essential in maintaining housing stability.
Thank you for joining us. And lastly, I'd love to bring on William Ritter from Texas Legal Services Center.
Hi, Michael. I'm a staff attorney with Texas Legal Services Center. And TLSC operates the Eviction Helpline, a statewide program providing legal assistance to qualifying tenants that are facing housing instability and homelessness. Our priority is serving those in rural counties. There's about 192 of them in Texas, but we also help in the non-rural counties when possible. Our objective is to ensure all Texans, particularly those with limited income and resources, that have equal access to justice and stable, safe housing for themselves and their families.
Thank you all for joining the show for this problem that has a lot of moving parts. That's why we need at least three people on the show to really address what's happening here. So with that being said, I'd really love to start at the beginning with what is happening Cabo San Lucas in Houston. How are we informed and tipped off to what's happening? Just to give some background, Donna, I would love for you to sort of introduce us to what's happening at this property and how we all got involved.
Yeah, let me maybe start with a 20,000-foot overview, and that is that Lone Star Legal Aid and I think all of the legal aid providers throughout the state of Texas have been charged with providing some level of outreach in courthouses. There was a moment in, you know, the grand scheme of things that the COVID pandemic hit, and we received funds originally from Washington, but came down through the state of Texas through the Texas Access to Justice Foundation, where we were not just entitled because we're lawyers, but also charged by the Texas Supreme Court to go into different courthouses where we had resources and actually provide any level of service that we, for which we had resources. And so at Lone Star Legal Aid, you know, if you go back and kind of do a quick review of the media that covered the eviction crisis in Harris County, you will find that Lone Star Legal Aid took the charge along with our Eviction Defense Coalition partners, namely Houston Volunteer Lawyers and our three local law schools. That's the Earl Carle Institute, Texas at Texas Southern University, and South Texas College of Law Houston, and the University of Houston. We really did everything we could to pull out all the stops and cover as many, if not all, of the dockets in Harris County. So we have been in Precinct 2, which is where Cabo San Lucas is located. I got word of the Cabo San Lucas crisis before it was Cabo San Lucas. I actually had received word of Timber Ridge evictions and then Redford evictions and ultimately Cabo San Lucas evictions through our staff that was appearing in the courthouse, just kind of noticing that there was an uptick in the number of evictions. And then eventually we also got word directly from our friends over where Bill offices out of Austin saying, hey, not only is there an uptick in the number of evictions, but we also have now clients who are signing up and need representation. And so while we have been and continue to be at outreach clinics in as many of the dockets as possible, Precinct 2 became a priority. It had been a priority every time that there's a mega docket anywhere in Harris County. But when we become aware that there's a mega docket, whether it's one or more landlords evicting, and the numbers are upwards of 100, and sometimes, of course, we've seen mega dockets with upwards of 400 evictions in one day, we turn that into a priority and we pull out all the stops. We do what we can to appear. So that's what kind of got this on our radar to begin with.
I see. So with you sort of monitoring whenever you see these large clusters of evictions all in one day or maybe 2 days across a couple of days, what is the sort of process to, I suppose, investigate what is happening at a given property?
So I'll pass the mic over to Bill here in just a moment, but he'll share with you what we kind of did collectively. What we do at Lone Star Legal Aid is, first of all, we want to make sure that we have the outreach resources to make sure that we can handle our intake. Because we are funded, whether it's federally, state funding, county funding, or local philanthropy, we do have eligibility requirements. We do not represent everybody. We really, truly only represent people whose income and asset levels are such that they would not otherwise be able to afford an attorney. And once we know that we can handle a particular docket, like we knew that we would make the resources available for this docket, the next question is, what are we going to do in terms of the litigation strategy? We did have more than one powwow with Texas Legal Services Center so that we had kind of a joint front. But our very next phone call was to Texas Housers. And truly the question was, if we're going to represent one or two out of 100 tenants, then how are we going to sleep at night knowing that 98 other tenants might get evicted? What do we need to do as lawyers charged with housing stability to make sure that as many tenants who all enjoy the exact same rights can be reached? And so that's where Texas Housers and other community organizers come into the mix and really turn this into a community effort.
Yeah, this was new for us when we were contacted by a Cabo tenant. And of course, the eviction process, you have to understand, is a summary process that's meant to be very quick. So she contacted us immediately when she was served with papers. And that gave us a 2-week window then to figure out what to do. It was when we met with her that we realized that many others were facing eviction, and checking the docket, we saw that it was a full day docket. So we did the intake here in Austin, and our information gets out through texaslawhelp.org, which is on the citation for all citations throughout the state. Because we are a statewide entity, people reach out to them and then are internally refer to us, and we give them some advice and counsel, and saw that this is the first multifamily eviction docket of this type that we've seen. We also do tabling events. We started that this summer, and it's an extremely successful project, and I would love to see it roll out further. So we reached out to Lone Star and said, hey, we've got these cases, and I think we ended up having 7 in total on the docket. And Donna just took this head on and established an immediate outreach that weekend. She found a place working with Texas Housers so that a door knocking campaign occurred that Saturday, and we referred to the attorneys and the intake that we set up at Whataburger. And I drove out from Austin to provide assistance if needed. And I have to say, Lone Star has got an incredible operation, highly efficient, and they do what they can. But you have to realize we can only help those that come seeking help. Those people that don't seek help, well, we can get them as they're walking into court. It might be 15 minutes before their hearing, but if there's 40 people on the docket and 38 of them need assistance, it's going to be real hard to sign up all 38 if they're eligible in that 15 minutes. So there are some logistical problems with the docket of this size, but Texas Housers was instrumental in getting the number of tenants out to Whataburger, and then also leaving word so that they would reach out to either us, Texas Legal Services Center, or Lone Star in the days, the 2 or 3 days leading up to the hearing.
Taylor, could you share the process leading up to going out to the property to door knock and meet with tenants? I would love to hear a little bit more about that process as well.
Yeah, of course. I can elaborate more on that. Going out door knocking was something that we were already prepared to do through one of our other outreach initiatives, Keep Harris Housed. We already had plans to go door knock at a high evicting complex in the Houston area. However, whenever we received word of what was happening at Cabo San Lucas, and also from what was happening at another complex who shared the same owner in the past, the Redford, we realized that we needed to pivot and that now was the time to pivot. So leading up to that, we were able to pull the information from the docket. So we had folks' addresses. We knew which doors to go to. We were able to gather a team to support us through this already existing Keep Harris Housed network. We had a network of great volunteers that came out to the complex that day. Furthermore, we spoke with some tenants at the Redford whose scenario was unsurprisingly similar to those who were at Cabo. And those tenants, they really stepped up and were instrumental in leading the block walk and instrumental in the outreach efforts with all our other partners. So that was a great effort, but it was pretty much just contacting everyone, making sure that we had the volunteers we needed to go and reach 100 doors in over 100 degree weather. That was the main preparation.
I might hop in if I can. You know, Taylor is very modest. I want to set the stage there because once Housers agreed to pivot from whatever their original plan was to Cabo San Lucas, and we pulled out a map and said, you know, what's the nearest location to Cabo San Lucas where we can set up a shop? We didn't have permission from Whataburger, but that Whataburger was literally just a few hundred feet away from the property. We didn't want anybody crossing major highways. We didn't want anybody needing to take transportation, but we did need air conditioning because the temperatures in Houston this August are scorchers. And every time Taylor, Julia, Sarah and the team of door knockers came into Whataburger, they were visibly cooked. The effort was no small feat. I have so much admiration for the people who volunteered that morning to go out, granted early morning, you know, trying to catch as much cooler temperatures as possible, but this was truly superpower. And I have so much admiration for the Housers folks who went out that morning door knocking.
Absolutely. And I'll just chime in and say the sweat that was coming out those door knockers as they came in and just the relief to see them inside. You know, we're very grateful for the work that they did.
So, Taylor, can you describe what were some of the things you heard? What were some of the things that you saw? Just give us a picture of what door knocking was that day and what some of the tenants had expressed to you.
Well, it was quite disheartening, a lot of what we saw at that complex. And disheartening is the wrong word. It was just deplorable conditions. Like, management and this property clearly failed those residents in so many ways. There was open wiring, sewage, windows broken. Many of the tenants that we spoke with had experienced some type of attack or assault on them or their family when they were in that complex. Mold in pretty much every unit. Broken windows, broken down doors, doors boarded up. Reports of folks just being able to move freely between units. Just the conditions were, like I said, disheartening, but unsurprising given what tenants were saying about the quality of management and the upkeep at that complex. Speaking with tenants, many were unaware of the eviction, aside from the citation that was served by the sheriff a few days earlier. Many of them spoke about not receiving a notice to vacate or the notice to vacate being improper in some type of way, which is also unsurprising given the volume of evictions this complex was attempting to pull off. And then tenants just speaking to the conditions while living there, very, very unsafe, unsafe for families. It was so disappointing to hear. Many tenants also spoke of issues with rent relief. They had received rent relief funds for an extended period of time, yet were being charged rent. So discrepancies in the financials of what tenants were paying. Furthermore, many tenants just spoke to, you know, wanting to leave the complex, but having really nowhere to go if they were to leave, which speaks to the broader issue of, you know, a lack of affordable housing in Houston. But that's besides the point. But that was really what we were seeing and hearing on the ground that day, was just the conditions are just honestly inhumane there.
And if I may mention, Michael, this is for those folks that that Taylor met and observed that are still living in the complex. We had numerous reports also of utility shutoffs, which is a landlord's self-help eviction remedy. You cut off their electricity and some people just leave. So we don't know what all happened there, but we describe with the conditions as described by Taylor and through what I've heard through our clients, there was not a lot of attention made to safe, habitable housing. And even when there was renovations, there were renovations made, it was done in such a way that they did not take. I had one client whose unit is in a fourplex, and the unit that was renovated was quickly inhabited, but then they moved out because of mold and mushroom growth under the toilets. And they would do the repairs, but they would do it piecemeal so that the unit next door with the roof collapsed or the mold growth would just invade whatever and take over whatever repairs had been made.
So we're hearing a lot of problems at this complex. I mean, living conditions, the circumstances of these notices to vacate and evictions being carried out. And, you know, I'm really at least proud to say that the team effort to address this was mighty. But I would love to talk a little bit about, you know, after you met with, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of households regarding their rights, that was leading up to a hearing that would occur about 5 or 6 days later. And what happened on the day of that hearing? And just were people able to show up? What took place in court that day to address these issues?
There was certainly a multiplier effect. So Saturday morning, housers went out, some people had the time and the bandwidth to come to Whataburger to get information. And ultimately, those individuals became, some of them became clients on the spot and sought representation from Lone Star Legal Aid. I think that from our perspective, we were hopeful and we were glad to see that many of our applicants who walked into Whataburger walked out as clients and went back home and drew out other neighbors, so that by the time we all went to court on Wednesday morning, there were other neighbors, meaning tenants being sued for eviction at the Cabo San Lucas complex, who had heard that there was an opportunity for representation, even if they had missed the Whataburger outreach event. And so by the time Wednesday morning came around, we saw a huge influx of tenants show up seeking representation, more than we had anticipated. In other words, I think that there was a greater than expected sort of multiplier effect of the door knocking from Cabo San Lucas. And it was just a beautiful thing for us to see so many tenants show up to court that day. I didn't expect to see so many more tenants show up to court that day as we actually ultimately saw. And to answer your question, Michael, so what ended up happening the morning of trial, we had several dockets set for that day. There was an 8 o'clock docket, 9 a.m. docket. I believe there was a 10 o'clock docket. I know there were two dockets set for the afternoon. Most of the dockets were Cabo San Lucas dockets, and I'm aware that there was a 1:30 docket that also included the Redford. We had one client who was number 8 on the 8 a.m. docket, and by the time our 8 a.m. client's case was heard, several pro se tenants had approached the bench and had their cases heard. I don't know how many tenants 1 through 7 actually appeared. I'm going to say there were at least 3 cases before our client. And I say our client, this was a client that had agreed to co-counseling between Lone Star Legal Aid, myself, and William Ritter with Texas Legal Services Center. So by the time client number 8 had her case called, we had seen at least 3 other tenants have their cases heard. They did not have counsel, and the visiting judge ruled against the tenants, allowing Cabo San Lucas to obtain judgments for possession for the landlord. I don't think, you know, from the tenant's perspective, I don't know that it was very clear to the tenants why the judge was not willing to award the landlord back rent. But there was a moment from my perch as an attorney that I saw the clerk talk to the visiting judge to say, this court is not entertaining back rent. We're only talking about possession. And so my understanding was, and I'm only saying this from having heard and not actually seen the judgments that were entered, is that the tenants who had judgments issued against them only had judgments for possession. Our client was called next, and I'll refer to the client as the Cressy case because that is her last name and it's in the public record, and I feel comfortable talking about what is publicly available. I will not discuss anything that is attorney-client privileged. But the Cressy case was called next, and I can tell you from my experience as an attorney, having overseen from a managing attorney perspective and as an attorney handling my own docket, I've now overseen thousands of eviction cases. They normally typically last a couple of minutes at best, maybe a few minutes if it's really contentious. It was 11 a.m. by the time that the Cressy case was coming to an end. And the reason that the Cressy case, this 8 a.m. docket case, lasted as long as it did was because we put up a very strong fight. We initially took up the notices to vacate. We marshaled up every single tenant who was willing to testify against the landlord that they had also not received a notice to vacate, a proper notice to vacate. The landlord wanted to rebut that, so there was a recess so that they could bring in an officer, Officer Luna. In my personal and professional experience, Officer Luna's testimony and credibility was shaky. We also had declarations prepared from tenants who were not set to be in court until 2:30 in the afternoon, also willing to testify that they did not receive the notice to vacate that was allegedly served. And when we were not convinced that the notice to vacate argument would be enough to persuade the court to have these cases dismissed in favor of the tenants, we also put up what we felt was our strongest defense, the fact that this particular piece of real estate had recently transferred ownership. And the ownership was transferred through a foreclosure sale. So it was not only a fact that we had a certified copy of the deed from Harris County Real Estate Records, but the lady with the management for Cabo San Lucas also represented to the court that the management had stayed the same, but that the ownership of Cabo San Lucas had recently changed, like this month, within the month of August. At some point, there was another recess in the case so that the plaintiff could bring in, quote, the bank. The bankers were going to show up, and eventually they did show up. There were two individuals who were supposedly with the bank. We were anticipating that they would testify. I should say that throughout this entire trial, several hours, we had backdoor discussions, negotiations with the landlord, trying to persuade them to dismiss their cases, which they refused to do. We encouraged them to dismiss their entire docket, which they refused to do. But it wasn't until the bankers showed up and we were prepared to proceed with trial that we understood that Cabo San Lucas was, in fact, prepared to dismiss all of its contested cases. What happened next is that the judge called out every tenant that had appeared in court in that morning's docket, all of the morning docket cases, 8 a.m., 9 a.m., all of the morning dockets. And all of those tenants' cases were dismissed. The type of dismissal that was entered was a non-suit. A non-suit is a dismissal by the plaintiff. It's not a dismissal that the court renders because the court has adjudicated the case in favor of the tenant or the defendant. It's basically a mechanism by the plaintiff saying, I want to withdraw my lawsuit. It also allows the landlord or the plaintiff to come back and sue on the same facts again. And so, yes, while the tenants had their cases dismissed, those cases were dismissed in a way that allows the landlord to come back. And the tenants have no way to prevent a non-suit from being entered.
If I may interject on that point, I have a question. So in that instance, is the eviction filing still on their record despite the plaintiff withdrawing the lawsuit?
That is a terrific question, Michael. And that question is one that I answer all day, every day. And the answer is yes. And so what I think is squarely unfair in Texas and is something that is likely to start getting litigated more heavily is the fact that once a case is filed, an eviction case is filed, there are tenant screening companies, including the big consumer credit bureaus, that pick, that there are companies that pick up those filing reports every single day. And there are tenant screening companies that compile those records and sell them to landlords, regardless of what the outcome of the lawsuit is. So even if the case is later dismissed, that tenant will have a blemish or a negative report that they ever were sued for eviction. What's awful and terribly damaging is that we know that there are landlords who will file multiple lawsuits against tenants. They'll file for absolutely no reason. And the end result is that there are tenants who will have eviction cases filed against them that are absolutely frivolous. And those tenant screening reports will haunt them. Ultimately, I think that there will be room down the road for Credit Reporting Act cases to be filed, and maybe one day there will be legislative change. But the way the law stands right now in the state of Texas, there is nothing to prevent a tenant screening agency from picking up the filing of the forcible detainer and reporting that out as a for sale record to any landlord who wants to buy it.
I might just add that if you do face an eviction, the best you can hope for is a judgment for the defendant. And that is where the defendant or the tenant actually wins the case, so that if they do try to find housing later and the landlord asks for about the eviction, the tenant then can at least have an order that says, hey, look, I won. It was in my favor. It wasn't a dismissal. It wasn't an eviction. It was me beating them, and the case was wrong. So until there is legislative change and other reporting changes, that's the goal, I think, for many of us.
So earlier, Donna mentioned that a visiting judge was the one who was presiding over these cases. Do you feel like that made a significant difference regarding the judgments or fates of these folks who showed up to eviction court?
Well, I think that you never know what you're going to get with a visiting judge. You just get them. And that's why we relied on Lone Star and called their assistance in, because there were so many people and the housing at stake. The judges can be anywhere from prior administrative judges, those that have not handled a lot of eviction cases, they're retired perhaps. You don't know what you're going to get. And I think the judge in this particular court, you know, in Lone Star, having the experience throughout the area, would have a better idea of what to expect and how to argue a case. I mean, when you're in front of a judge many times, multiple times, you know what works with that judge. And with the visiting judge, you don't know. And so that does have, I think, important implications for the case. But the case must go on.
I just want to note for the public, if a tenant is facing an eviction case and there's a visiting judge on the bench that day, I would want tenants to know that as long as their trial has not started yet, a tenant is entitled to object to the visiting judge. And the court will need to reset the case. You're not required to go in front of the visiting judge. If there's a visiting judge on the bench, you are entitled to object to the visiting judge. The tenants who had appeared in trial pro se on their own before the Cressy case did ask the court to reconsider their earlier judgments, and the judge did vacate their earlier judgments and dismiss their cases as well. So there was sort of I'm going to call it like a backwash of benefit to the argument made in the Cressy trial that impacted in a very positive and optimistic way the judgments that had been entered just 3 hours prior, which was huge.
Yeah, Michael, I'd like to add also, you have to show up, or you had to show up that day in order to get your case dismissed. And so there were many people that did not show. I mean, there's 120 cases throughout the day, or 160, I guess, with the Redford docket. And I have a real problem. I mean, when the court sees a systemic problem and form petitions, I think that there should be at least some consideration for a blanket continuance or a blanket decision. But the reason why I say this is because I had clients that did not show up. And I know that there are people that were not clients and did not show up. And there was, in fact, the reason why one of the tenants who was on the docket didn't show up is because he is a service member and he's in Korea. And he did that. He's been out of the unit for over a year. And that particular tenant went in as a witness, paid up all his rent, turned over his orders to the management office. And somehow this service member was on Wednesday's docket. He now has a default judgment of eviction against him, which will haunt him. He's a young man. And as Donna's been mentioning, it's going to be on your report. It will be reported and he will have to answer to it. And that is just one of the problems I see here. And I think beyond all the problems with the habitability of the premises and the maintenance and the upkeep, we have a real failure of management here, where the notice to vacates were not done as they're supposed to be done. When you have a summary proceeding and a remedy available at law, you have to do what you need to do by what the statute says. And it's not hard. It's very ABC. And when the management office can't even deliver the notice to vacate, and then we can talk all day about all the things management, property managers do that don't comply with the rules, and that's how we get evictions denied. But what appears here to be is just like a McDonald's cookie cutter approach, where they just filled out names and apartment unit numbers and checked the boxes and swore I did it and filed it with the court. And I think there needs to be some accountability. I think there needs to be an investigation. And those people that swear under oath that they did something and did not should be held accountable.
Absolutely. I mean, there's just so much to consider here. But just given everything that we've already talked about, I would love to know what comes next for the tenants at Cabo San Lucas who have experienced, I guess, the evictions and the hearing. And actually, are there just additionally, are there still folks in the property who have not been evicted? Are there still folks who are living there? I know that I guess this property has experienced a lot of sort of departures, but what comes next for the residents who are sort of caught up in the legal aspect of this, and what comes next for the property itself?
Well, I can speak a little to that, Michael. As we walked on around the complex that Saturday, we did encounter several tenants who did not have an eviction filing against them at this time, including one who had just moved in a few months ago. We encountered several tenants, and we just relayed the same information, gave them the flyers to pass out to neighbors, and encouraged them to just, you know, keep an eye out for what's been going on with this property and to protect themselves in whichever way they can. As far as what goes next with Cabo San Lucas is we're still going to be involved there. We're still communicating with tenants. We're still getting tenants to communicate with one another to have their demands met and ensure that they are able to hold management accountable and have better living conditions, remain housed, not have to be unhoused, because as many vacant units as we saw, as many boarded up units, as many folks who did not show up to their hearing, there were so many that did. And there were so that the energy in the room when the decision came down in the morning docket was palatable. You could sense the excitement, the relief that folks had, but also they knew that the fight was not over. They know that this is not the end of the road, because we presume that management is going to strike back. And I mean, you know, even if they don't read the Texas property code for a blueprint on how to properly execute these evictions, the judge basically outlined it for them, how to do a proper 3-day notice to vacate. So we fully anticipate the complex will you know, attempt these evictions again. And that's why we're keeping in contact with these tenants. We're continuing communicating with them, ensuring they continue to communicate with one another, communicate with their lawyers if they're represented, and look out for one another, because it takes a community. It takes the entire complex being on watch, demanding that action be taken to get results. And so we are still continuing to engage the tenants at both Cabo San Lucas and the Redford to educate them on their rights, make sure that they are empowered, and making sure that they fight.
We have been inundated in a good way with tenants. So we not only represented tenants who had approached us for information at Whataburger, and obviously tenants who were screened on the spot and we picked up as clients at the docket that day of the hearing. We've also now been approached by people who were defaulted and have heard of what happened in court that day and are now needing help appealing their cases, their judgments to the county court at law. Some of the cases were reset in the 2:30 docket for this upcoming Thursday. So all of the morning cases were dismissed, but Cabo San Lucas refused to dismiss their 2:30 docket, and those cases were reset to this Thursday. So the action will continue. Unfortunately, I will not be there myself, but one of my colleagues is stepping in, and Lone Star Legal Aid will most definitely be there. The tenants whose cases were dismissed are being advised, one and all, that they should expect to get new notices to vacate. What sort of notices to vacate they will get is really curious to me, and whether Cabo San Lucas will actually follow the law is will be interesting. We'll have to live and learn. It's my contention as an attorney that Cabo San Lucas, the property has been through a foreclosure, and any attempt at an eviction at this point would require a 90-day notice. And that is based on a statute that protects tenants in properties that have gone through foreclosure. At the same time, when I talk to tenants who are now my clients, my Cabo San Lucas people, my Cabo San Lucas family, I tell them, I think you need to think about packing up and leaving under your own grace, your own dignity. I don't want a situation where you're living in a place that will likely not be repaired and is very likely to ultimately be condemned. And so is it a great situation? No. Are we pleased that we were able to stall the eviction? Absolutely. But do I think that the tenants need to go find other housing? Ultimately, eventually, regrettably, yes.
Yeah, I just think in a broader issue is just the issue of affordable housing. And with the financing that's going on for these multifamily housing units, these guys are looking to get higher rents. They're looking to get a better return on their money so that they can afford the higher interest rates for their new financing. This is just what may have been a good attempt 2 years ago to create affordable housing. To me, is a failed attempt now, and it just means less affordable housing on the market, and the need ever more so to find that those resources available for those people that cannot afford the $1,000 rents.
With everything that goes on in the sort of panic of I mean, this is a very extreme situation at Cabo, but in any situation like this, you know, where should tenants look? What should tenants do to safeguard and protect themselves from potentially becoming unhoused or any of the negatives that are associated with eviction?
I would say my number one advice would be start collecting receipts before you even move in. And from the time you move in to the time of, if an eviction is ever filed against you, make sure you have all of your receipts of payments, including money orders, you know, any money sent to your landlord, any rent relief pledges. Maintain contact with a caseworker, your caseworker, if you're part of a rapid rehousing program, and make sure that you keep receipt of that. Any rent relief pledges that you receive, the notice to vacate, because if there was none, then you should have a picture of the date that they allege the notice to vacate was delivered, and they're not being that in your unit or mailed to you. Make sure you have all your evidence. Gather it. Any contact with landlord, property management that you make, log it, keep it. I would say that is the number one thing, is make sure you have the receipts to prove what's happening to you.
I'm going to add to that and say, tenants, if you're being sued, do not default. You have to go to court. And if it's not obvious, I need to state this, your landlord is not your lawyer. They will not give you good advice. I don't know how many tenants have approached me and said, but my landlord told me, and whatever the landlord is telling you is not good legal advice. If you have time before your hearing, reach out to your local legal aid. If you're eligible for legal services, hopefully there are resources available to represent tenants who are facing eviction. And I double down on all of the advice that Taylor's given. Keep your receipts. If you're trying to make a payment for rent and the landlord is not accepting your rent payment, I would urge tenants to memorialize that. The way to do that is to record the conversation. In Texas, you're not required to ask permission or even notify the other side that you're recording a conversation. Just turn on the recording device on your smartphone. Where landlords try to jack up your rent and haven't given you proper notice, you're going in there to make your regular rent payment. If they're not willing to accept it, hopefully you have evidence of that. And we have seen too many people from the Cabo San Lucas complex come around and say they tried to jack up my rent and they wouldn't take my regular rent payment, but they have no evidence of that. So those are my kind of two cents on all of this. Thank you for asking that really important question.
I'd like to add one more thing, Michael. I would encourage any tenants to speak with their local government officials, really advocate for this right to counsel in eviction courts. It's so important and makes such a difference. And government officials have, you know, the power of the purse. They're able to tip the scales in terms of funding, and many legal aid services are underfunded in this area and need more funding to be able to bear the load of eviction cases that are ongoing in Harris County. And so I would really encourage tenants to speak with their local elected officials and advocate for that.
I think, of course, going to court is critical. So I'll be the third to chime in on that. And if at all possible, if really eviction is the remedy and you've got that 3-day notice to vacate and you knew it was coming, you can really help yourself by not having the eviction case filed at all. And you would do that by working with your landlord and trying to get out by the 3 days or 5 days or whatever you might be able to agree to, so that you don't have that eviction case actually filed. But the one thing that really irks me, though, is there are people out there you cannot trust. And I have heard and I have represented people on appeal where they have paid $500 and above to non-lawyers out there that are contacting folks on the eviction docket and selling them a service. We will help you with your eviction. And in exchange for the money, all they do is give you the appeal document. They'll tell you, don't show up for court and just file this appeal. You'll be able to stay there for another month or two. So contact your legal aid. Call our office. We're statewide. Read your papers. On the back of the citation, it's going to say, if you need eviction help, call. And go to this website, texaslawhelp.org. It is stated on the citation, each and every eviction case. You go to that website, that's one of our entities that operates under Texas Legal Services Center. It will be handed off to us inside in-house with the eviction helpline, and we will get you to your appropriate legal aid. There's 3 legal aid offices throughout the state. We'll help you find resources to not only defend, but then also to find alternative housing and affordable housing. So don't ignore it. Pay attention to it. Try to keep that eviction off your record. And if they're not with legal aid or a governmental agency, yeah, don't give them money.
To me, as a legal aid lawyer, the magnificence of what happened Wednesday is the epitome of right to counsel. We call our initiative Right to Counsel, and I know that that's unpopular with a lot of other organizations, especially in government, but what happened Wednesday is exactly what Right to Counsel is all about. One tenant had one case litigated, and the result was that every tenant who showed up for court had their case dismissed. And if lawyers could be in court for every single tenant, we would have evened out the playing field. I assure you that if there was not a single lawyer in court on Wednesday, I assure you every single tenant would have been evicted. This is what Right to Counsel is about.
Thank you all for joining us. I just want to say, if you want to learn more about all of our guests on this episode, Donna Carney can be found at LoneStarLegal.org if you'd like to learn more about Lone Star Legal Aid. If you'd like to learn more about the Texas Legal Services Center, you can visit TexasLawHelp.org. And for Taylor's work here at Housers, you can always visit TexasHousers.org. And we will be keeping everyone up to date on this case at Cabo San Lucas, and of course, any other emerging news that comes from this issue. But for now, we're going to end this episode. So again, I just wanted to thank all of our guests for joining us. And until next time, we'll see you on the next episode. And JT Herrschmack will play us out. Bye for now.